minorities regarding community languages and so on. If I would like to be extremely brief to explain what our organization, the European Bureau for Lesser-Used Languages, is doing, I would say the following. You had just now an overview of what exists, or better, what does not exist in Europe. Probably you had the impression that the glass is half empty. Well, the role of our organization is to show that the glass is half full. It's exactly the same, but so to find out how we can use what exists to make the life for minorities better than it is. It's sometimes a very hard job, because you know, if you don't have a right standard, if you don't have a basic European legislation which gives you some rights, it's very difficult to achieve good results. But sometimes, and I would say it most cases, it functions. Because the general opinion in Europe towards the linguistic diversity has changed. Beforehand, I think Mr. Nagy mentioned the Alpha Resolution. The Alpha Resolution was the very beginning of the discussion of linguistic diversity in the European Union. And it has arisen from the fact that at that time there were some problems noticed just by the European Parliament. We are speaking about a prehistorical period. Imagine there was no internet, there was no fax at that time, just some television. But at that time, I'm speaking about the end of 70s and early 80s, some people in the European Parliament realized the danger of standardization of culture and languages in Europe. What Mr. Arfet told me was that they realized that in one old Danish university, Aarhus, there was a consistent number of dissertations made through English. And the Danes were very preoccupied and say, what will happen with our language if we don't find something to support it? What happened at the time? At the time it happened that the media, specifically the television, came to the European market with new products. And the new products were the American soap operas and the Japanese cartoons. And people lost their contact with the local reality because they stayed hours and hours in front of television. And children lost part of their history. The tales told by the grandmother, which my generation remembers, because they had only Japanese cartoons. And this is the reason why in the European Parliament they became preoccupied and they started to discuss about this. And they said, what's the European culture? Well, there are some languages and there are some different culture, but what's the limit? Shall we support some of them, at least those who are spoken by some million of people? Where is the limit? And they realize that there is no limit. Because as soon as you fix a limit, you kill some languages and some cultures. And from that particular moment, the thinking about the linguistic diversity started. And it took approximately 16, 17 years before the linguistic diversity appeared in the Charter of Fundamental Rights, in the Article 22, as a right. And it's the first time the linguistic diversity has been written as an officially, internationally recognized right. And since that, some very important steps have been done. Some steps which brought the linguistic diversity into European Constitution, into one of the tasks of the European Union, and which brought the European Union to the statement that all languages are equal from the cultural point of view in value and dignity. It's an important statement. And to decide, just at the last moment when they drafted the last text of the European Constitution, that they will have two lists of languages in the European Union. There will be the list, certainly, of the official languages, which are now 20. There will be more when new states will be enter. But there will be the second list, because the European Constitution can be translated into languages which are official only in part of some member states, and they, the states will have to notify this translation. This means that the European Union now established the second list of those languages which are not official in any of the whole state. In any of the European Union member states. This means Catalan, this means Basque, this means Welsh, this means Frisian, but this could mean Roma, and this could mean Ruthenian, and so on. So we are approaching to a new understanding of linguistic diversity as a common value, and the promotion of the linguistic diversity as a common European cultural heritage. Certainly, you will say you are speaking only about languages. Well, basically, in European Union environment, we can speak only about languages, and neither in the language field things are not as they should be. You heard beforehand the explanation related to the new European Constitution, and you heard that discrimination based on languages is not prohibited. Article 21, if I well remember, Part 2 of the Constitution, Charter of Linguistic Rights, and discrimination is not prohibited by the Article 2 of the Constitution, when it said that what were the conditions to become members of the European Union. But if you go ahead, and if you look at the article which now has a number 14, if I were a member of the Part 3, you will find the fields where there are listed those grounds for which the European Commission can take initiatives if discrimination exists, and you will not find the languages, which means that in European Union discrimination based on language is not allowed, but the European Union has no instruments to deal against those who could discriminate on the ground of languages. So the situation is still unclear. But we have made, with the draft constitution, a new step forward, and this is very important. Because if you go ahead, if you go back, and if you go back to the to the very start of the European Union, you will see that, in a way, diversity, cultural diversity, appears first in a very smooth way in the Maastricht Treaty. It was at that time, if I well remember, Article 129, which was Article 127, which was Article of the Culture. And it was strengthened in the Amsterdam Treaty, in the Article 151. But still, the unanimity of all the member states was needed, which means that if one state is against, you cannot do anything. In the Treaty of Nice, nothing changed, but there was the Charter of Fundamental Rights, which brought the linguistic diversity as a principle. Now, with the European Constitution, for culture, unanimity is not needed anymore, which means that the European Council will be able to decide by majority, by qualified majority, about provisions in favor of linguistic diversity. So if you see these steps, you will notice that we got something at each point, and it's a good way to understand that the basic European Union policy is not improving. Is improving, sorry. Well, we would like more. We asked more. And believe me, I will tell you the Article 21 of the Charter of Fundamental Rights. The Union respects cultural, religious, and linguistic diversity was basically drafted in our office, but the article was different, and then it was reduced step by step to this text. It was drafted by a group of experts, Professor Thornberry, who is now chairing the United Nations Committee on Fight Against Discrimination, Professor John Packer, who was at that time director of the High Commissioner for National Minorities in the OSCE, by Alan Rosas, who was the consultant of the European Commission, now is judge of the European Court of Justice, and Felix Marti, who is the president of the linguistic section of the UNESCO, and then Jean-Marie Verlin, who was one of the persons who drafted the Charter of the European Charter, the Council of Europe Charter. And so we brought together these five people and gave them the task to draft an article, and they drafted an article, but it was completely different. But, well, we got something. And since that, we have now something in hand. We have the new draft constitution, and I'm very confident that this will be accepted, ratified by all the states. We have the treaty, we have the statements of the Commission, we have the statements of the Council of Ministers, we have the new action plan for language learning and linguistic diversity, which arose from the European Year of Languages in 2001. And we have some possibilities to develop certain activities within the European Union, even if we don't have a specific program for linguistic diversity and for minority languages. We asked, and the European Parliament asked, and we hope the new commissioner will be helpful to support within this mandate, 5 years mandate. I really hope that at the end of the mandate we will have a specific European Commission program for linguistic diversity with certainly specific attention to regional or minority languages. You understand that speaking about linguistic diversity, it's not a real need to promote English or German in Europe. They are already promoted. So this is the frame we are working in. What's EBLL? Well, the European Bureau for Lesser Languages is a non-governmental organization. Its membership are the so-called member state committees, which are committees, state-based NGOs organized within the member states. In the old member states of the European Union, we have 14 member state committees. We don't have committee in Portugal. There is only one linguistic group, Mirandés, very small and not very interested in these issues. It's mostly a cultural movement. And from the new member states, we already have the committees in Hungary, in Poland, in Czech Republic, and so Slovakia will be the fourth. We have the applicant committee in Estonia, but we still haven't agreed with them about some details regarding the Russian community in Estonia, which are, as you heard before, a very sensitive issue. European Bureau is not an organization which is financing activities. We are financed by the European Commission under certain conditions in percentage of the activities, so we always need to have other sources of funding, but we cannot give money directly to communities. What we do is something different, but let me shortly tell you what we do in divided in four groups of activities. First, information about minorities. You will not believe, but basically in Brussels, just few people know about minorities, about minority languages. It's not a common understanding in European environment. So we have an information center in Brussels, we have some publications, we organize conferences, we meet members of parliament, politicians, we inform them, we give them all the information needed. Second field of activity is to inform the minorities. Most of the minorities live in very decentralized areas. I will say that Bratislava is one of the few capital cities in Europe where you have the presence of minorities. But in most cases you don't have minorities in the capital. If you see, for example, United Kingdom, you have Wales, then you have Scotland, you have Northern Ireland, but you don't have this type of minorities in London. You don't have this type of minorities in Paris, in Madrid, in Rome, in Berlin. You have them spread out in the periphery. So it's very difficult for those people to understand what's happening in Brussels and to know what the possibilities of funding are, what the possibilities to get support from the European Union are all over Europe, and this is one of the second tasks. So we inform, we organize conferences, we organize meetings, we publish different booklets just to inform minorities about the possibilities they have in the European Union. People should be aware of what their rights are if you want that they will use them. The third field of activity, which is extremely important and was the main field of activity, is to bring in minorities together. When we started, I was not in the organization at the time, but when EBU started in 1982, people didn't know each other. People know about the existence of Basques somewhere in Spain and Frisians somewhere in the Netherlands and Welsh somewhere in the United Kingdom. But they didn't know what their system are, how they are teaching their language in the schools. Do they have bilingual signs? Do they have the right views of language? Do they have radio, television in their own language? So to bring people together was extremely important to make them know each other and to give them the possibility of exchanging experience. Well, speaking about minorities, you cannot ask which is the best solution, which is the best protection in Europe, because we are speaking about people. We are not speaking about electrical devices and then say, well, this is the most safe solution. And each minority has its own history, its own language, its own tradition, its own way of life. And so you have built up a specific model for each minority. But doing it, you can certainly use experiences other minorities have made somewhere else dealing with similar problems. And so it was extremely important to bring people together and to allow them to know each other and to build up their policy on the basis of what the experience were on the other sides. And now we'll have to start to do this with the new European Union member states. I envisage that since next year we'll have to restart this program, which was called Study Visit Program, and it was it allowed approximately 2,000 experts from different minorities to visit for 1 week another minority in another place and to have specific information about some topics. There were specific programs for journalists, specific programs for teachers, specific programs for people dealing with linguistic rights, and it was really considered by all of them extremely useful. I think that we should, since next year, start to organize the study visits from new states to old states and from old states to new states. It's quite a heavy program. It also requests some contribution from the person who goes there or the institutions that the people belong to, because the European Commission never covers 100%, but it was worthwhile to restart because we have this good experience. And within this field, we are also trying to bring together groups which want to produce good European projects. As you know, in most of the cases, when you apply for European money, you need to have partners from other states. There are some programs you need partners from 4, 5, or 6 states, and it's very difficult for a small minority to find partners to develop a program. So we can support, we can try to do it for you. If you have a specific program, we can put you in contact with other minorities in Europe who are interested in the same topic, and maybe together you can develop a joint program and get European money for to develop it. Okay, field number 4, which is the political and most important, is the political lobbying. We are present in the European Parliament, but we have been given the status of the terminology is different from the organization to organization, but we are, let me say it in a simple way, observers in the Council of Europe, with the UNESCO, with the OSCE High Commissioner for National Minorities, with the United Nations, and we are considered the most important consultative organization of the European Union. As you know, European Union doesn't have observer status for NGOs. We are cooperating with the European Commission. We are present in the European Parliament, specifically the Intergroup for Regional Minority Languages. We are cooperating with the Committee of the Regions. So we have a general overview of contacts and knowledge of political problems in most of these organizations. Specifically, we are supporting them with reports, with draft documents, those things which are sometimes quite complicated, and politicians who have a lot of problems, not just one, have difficulties to do it personally. This political lobbying has been specifically in last years quite successful. Well, this is what EBRU is doing, now I would leave the floor to Mr. Elish, because now I think you should start to discuss of your committee. And I'm very pleased to be here, because I have seen the development in Slovakia since many years. I was here. I think we were staying just here in the hotel, very close here, during the Mečar government. And I had a press conference at the end. I was a member of a fact-finding commission organized by FUEN with Mr. Komlesi. Those Hungarians certainly know him. And we had a fact-finding mission, and at the end we had a press conference, which, believe me, was an extremely difficult and extremely complicated thing at the time. And I'm very pleased that the situation has changed. I'm very pleased that general policy in Slovakia is now extremely positive towards linguistic diversity. Certainly there are problems, but everywhere there are problems. Don't be worried about this. We minority speakers make problems everywhere. But I can say that here in Republic of Slovakia, the environment now it's among the best we have in the new European Union member states, which is really a pleasure for us, and I'm sure that the committee you will establish will be a good committee, and will have a strong cooperation with Central EBRU and with other organizations. One sentence more: if you will establish the committee, we in any case already planned to have a small, let me call it, office or our fixed presence somewhere in Central Europe, and we would be very pleased to have it in Slovakia, because it's geographically present, because geographically central, and because of this political development you had in last 5-6 years, and the improvement of linguistic rights and minority policy. Thank you.